It's no secret Australia is grappling with a mental health crisis, compounded by years of natural disasters and the COVID pandemic. Yesterday, the government held a roundtable on how best to fix the sector that's failing to keep up with demand. The Minister for Health, Mark Butler, joins me now. Minister, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thank you, Patricia.
You've announced two new national peak bodies on mental health. One's going to be representing people experiencing mental health disorders and the other one's for carers and families. What difference will they make?
Well, it gives patients a voice, also gives carers a voice who play such a critical role in the recovery of their loved ones, particularly who are experiencing more severe mental illness. So this is, frankly, something that should have happened many years ago. When I was the Mental Health Minister more than a decade ago, we allocated funds to set up an organisation that would support the capability of patients or consumers having a voice in the development of mental health policy. But unfortunately, that wasn't implemented. Nothing happened over the last decade. And so this, I think, will play a really important role in helping consumers build the skills they need to come to the table and participate and contribute to the development of policy, along with, obviously, all of the service providers, the doctors, the psychiatrists, psychologists, and so many others who are very good at coming to the table and participating in these debates.
We know Australia is facing a mental health crisis right now. At the beginning of this year, you announced those cuts to subsidised psychology sessions from 20 to 10. You promised an alternative solution so more people could access a psychologist, and you made a case, actually on this program too, explaining that you didn't think that was the best way to actually get people help. So what will replace those sessions?
Well, I think the discussion yesterday, which was a really important discussion that I was involved in for several hours, just reinforced, as you said in your introduction, the pressure that the mental health system is under and the diversity of that pressure. I mean, there are some really significant problems in the system that are long-standing, that don't relate to the natural disasters and the pandemic that you talked about. But undoubtedly, the experience of Australians' lives over the last 3 years have aggravated all of those pressures. We don't have enough workforce in the right place. People in parts of Australia, particularly in the outer suburbs of our cities and in rural and regional Australia, just don't have access to services that are taken for granted in some of the wealthier suburbs in inner cities. And there are real problems with bits of the system being able to talk to other bits of the system. So I think the message from yesterday was there are some immediate pressures that we need to work on. There are some services, for example, that aren't funded beyond the 30th of June, weren't funded by the former government, we're having to work on right now. But the longer term response to some of those really deep systemic pressures are not easy. They're not going to be quick. There was no easy solution presented to me by the sector yesterday. They recognise, as much as anyone does, that this is hard work, and we committed to them, to working with them very deeply, myself, my Assistant Minister, Emma McBride, who works day-to-day in mental health, to start to respond to these needs.
Okay, you mentioned two things, that one thing is long-term and one is immediate. 30th of June, what runs out and what are you considering extending?
Look, I've got about 200 measures in the health portfolio. Some of them are related to mental health. There are measures in Indigenous health and a range of other areas that just weren't fully funded by the former government. I think Katie Gallagher has talked about this across government, that there were just many, many, many terminating measures. These are ongoing programs. They're not pilots that were only supposed to be funded for a couple of years to see how they went. In many cases, these are programs that have been in place for many years or even decades. So we're having to find the money, go through the process in the Expenditure Review Committee to make sure that those really important ongoing programs don't fall off a cliff on the 30th of June. And some of those programs were mentioned to me yesterday.
So can you give any specific examples in the mental health space of programs that you've guaranteed will continue past June 30?
Well, I've said we're working on all of them. One of them, for example, was in the Northern Territory, working in Indigenous communities that don't have access to the sort of program we talked about last time on your show, Patricia, a program that really predominates in the major cities. This is a terrific organisation that's been working in the Territory for many, many years. It's only funded to the 30th of June. Now, that's just one example that was raised with me yesterday, but I know, having gone through this process with Katie Gallagher, with my department on the ERC, there are a range of them across the portfolio, not just in mental health.
So are all 200 to be saved, or will some go?
Well, you'll see that in the budget.
Can you give me an indication of what you're finding?
Well, we're trying to make sure that all of the services that people have relied upon for many years, good services, services that there's no question mark on in terms of their quality, the evidence base, their ability to deliver service in an equitable way. Often they are plugging gaps that otherwise would exist in the system where there's more demand-driven service through Medicare. So these are critically important services we're working really hard on to make sure that Australians can continue to rely upon them. I mean, one of the challenges is when a government only part funds them and sees that funding drop off on the 30th of June, when you're delivering a budget in May, that contributes to enormous uncertainty for the service and for their staff. So we're having to work with all of those services on that issue as well.
One of the biggest issues is the shortage of psychologists, particularly in outer suburban and regional areas. How are you going to address that supply problem? I've got lots of texts, different suggestions. One is that you need to increase places at universities. Is that on the table?
Well, I had a terrific conversation with some of the people from the APS, the Psychology Society, yesterday about some of the sort of issues in universities. I mean, traditionally, the psychology degree has been treated a bit like the English literature degree because it started really to emerge from the arts, Bachelor of Arts, many years ago, whereas actually it's much more intensive than a traditional arts degree in terms of the resources required by universities. So there is an issue there, I think, about the way in which this degree is treated and funded, and you know, we'll have further discussions about that. But the bigger issue, other than just the sheer numbers of psychologists in the system, which is a challenge, is their distribution, as I've said on your program before. When you set up a demand-driven system that really depends upon decisions by private businesses about where they locate, you will see gaps in the market. And it's the job of government to plug those gaps. This is not new. We did this when we were last in government. We had to fund psychology services in outer suburbs, particularly poorer suburbs, and in rural and regional Australia, because private psychology businesses weren't setting up there. They weren't setting up, they weren't delivering services to communities that the recent evaluation showed actually have much higher levels of need, more than twice the levels of high or very high mental distress you see in poorer parts of Australia than exist in richer parts of Australia. So higher levels of need, much poorer levels of access, and as the evaluation said, those levels of access have actually got worse over time, not better.
I want to move to Medicare, and there is a growing consensus that Medicare is in crisis, and of course Medicare is well loved in our country. The Strengthening Medicare Task Force is due to hand its report to the government imminently. When will that be released?
Well, it'll be released in days. We've worked really hard. I mean, the work that was done by all of those groups that participated in the task force with me, I chaired all of the meetings. They're busy people and they devoted hours and hours to the discussions we had and to the finalisation of the report that we'll be able to release very, very shortly.
Okay, so it'll be publicly released, the whole report, and when you say yes. Coming days, I'm thinking this week?
No, well, coming days won't necessarily be this week, but in very short time indeed. We know
next
that
week.
there's a huge thirst out there for this, because people recognise that this cherished institution, as you described it, I think, Patricia, is in real strife. I've said it's in the worst shape it's been in the 40-year history of Medicare, and particularly general practice, which is the backbone of our healthcare system, is in a truly parlous state that if we don't turn it around, we'll get much worse before it gets better, because not enough medical graduates, young doctors, are choosing general practice as their career because they see the difficulty of working as a general practitioner. We've got to turn this around.
Yeah, so one of those issues, of course, is bulk billing. And we know that bulk billing rates are in free fall. It's pretty confronting. I mean, if you're in Canberra, good luck to you trying to find any doctor that can bulk bill you. But it's also becoming a growing issue across the country now. Last week you said the average gap fee is now more than the Medicare rebate fee itself. Why don't you increase the rebate?
Well, that's one option that has been put on the table by at least one of the doctor organisations, probably both of them. It's something that we'll be looking through. But what I really wanted to be clear about with people as I've talked about this is that simply putting more money into the existing structures is not going to deliver the type of care modern Australia needs. I mean, we don't just need to add more money to the existing systems. We need to change the existing system because the consensus from doctors, from nurses, from patient groups and many others is that Medicare designed 40 years ago with a completely different disease profile to the one we see today is not delivering the wraparound multidisciplinary care that modern Australia needs, an older Australia with much higher levels of complex chronic disease. So, yes, there's financial pressure on general practice. After 6 years of a freeze on the Medicare rebate, so effectively a freeze on their income, there's undoubtedly real financial pressure on general practice, and we're very cognizant of that. But we can't just add more money to the existing system. We have to reform the system. People have known this for years.
So what does reform look like? Because obviously the rate that GPs are getting, they're saying, is just too low. Do you accept their premise?
Well, as I said, 6 years of freezing the rebate obviously has meant there's enormous cost pressure on doctors. Their costs were continuing to go up while their income was staying flat. So unsurprisingly, for those people whom they charge a gap fee, which is about a third of the Australian community, their gap fee has been skyrocketing. That's no surprise, and that's been a big part of our discussions, and that's certainly going to be factored into our deliberations. But they've also said that Medicare was designed really as a fee-for-service. You'd go and see a doctor, they'd prescribe a particular treatment or a medicine, you'd go away and hopefully you'd get better, and you'd come back 6 months later with something different. Complex chronic disease requires a very different relationship with your doctor and the other allied health professionals and nurses working with them. You need a team working with you, a team that talks to each other with different digital systems that are connected as well. And we just don't have that in Australia right now because there hasn't been enough attention paid to keeping Medicare up to date with the changing disease profile, the changing needs of the Australian community.
Minister, many thanks for joining us. And given it's coming days, I suspect I'll speak to you in coming days again.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Patricia.
That's the Minister for Health and Aged Care, Mark Butler. And you're listening to ABC RN Breakfast.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.